Okay, we're back again. We have a small audience, but I'm sure an appreciative one out here. Our audiences diminish and swell from time to time as things are happening around here. This next workshop concerns women's roles in fishing families and fishing communities. You know, when I look around out here, most of the people are male who are working on nets and boats and various things, but that's only 50% anyway, of what happens in maritime communities. When we think about them, oftentimes we think about fishermen and some of the activities that you see around here because they're visible, they're out there on the water, they're selling their fish, and so on. But a lot of the important things, or just as many of the important things that happen in fishing communities, are the things that fishermen's wives, other women are doing to help carry on all the activities that have to do with catching fish. I'd like to introduce two ladies from fishing communities. On my extreme right, Judy Moore from Cortez, right over here. And Mrs. Bennett, you have to tell me your first name.
Priscilla.
Again. Priscilla Bennett from Wilatka. That's the lower St. John's River in the center part of the state. And both of these ladies are married to fishermen. And, you know, we were talking earlier about the fact that sometimes people marry into a fishing family or a fishing community from another part of the state or maybe another part of the country, and things can seem very different to them when they first come into this whole new way of life, this whole new part culture. And Mrs. Mora was telling me, well, that's what happened to her. Can you tell me where you grew up and how you happened to come down to Cortez?
I grew up in West Virginia, Huntington, West Virginia, and a girlfriend and I came down to Florida, Bradenton area, looking for work and with the idea of staying if we could find jobs. And she had known my husband the year before, so she introduced us, and we went together for 3 months, and we've been married for 33 years now. So,
well, what did you think of Cortez when you first got there, and what was the life like?
Well, very, very different from anything that I had ever known, of course. I had never been around the water, boats, fishing, knew absolutely nothing about it. And it was just such a small little village, too. It was most unusual.
Well, what about the sort of the cycle of the day, the hours of the day, and the work patterns of people? Like, I work usually like 8 to 5. What about fishermen?
Any time, day or night. And you never know when they leave, when they're coming home. Mm-hmm. So, anytime, day or night.
Now, Priscilla, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you grew up?
I was born and raised in Crescent City, which is just about 10 or 15 miles from Wilatka, where I live. And it's right on Lake Crescent, which is also a big lake that's used for commercial fishing as well as sports fishing. And it's a town that's advertised as the bass capital of the world. Now, while we've got the Catfish Festival, which become one of the top 20 festivals in the United States. But my father was a fisherman, my ex-husband was a fisherman, now this husband I'm married to was a fisherman, thank goodness now he's sports fisherman, not commercial. It's easier on me.
He was a commercial fisherman before?
Yes, he has commercial fished quite a bit.
I think just about all of us, when we're growing up, we have certain chores that we have to perform around the house. For me, I remember I took out the trash and raked the lawn and cut the grass and things like that. Now, Priscilla, when you were growing up, your dad was a fisherman. Were there things that you had to do that were related to fish?
Yes, the boys was always the ones that got the job of helping skin the catfish. And that had to be done immediately. But Dad was one that was famous for his traps. In fact, Mr. Hamilton said that Daddy showed him how to make the traps. And there was a lot of stuff like cutting wire. And come to find out the other day, I had an extra cartilage in my arm. I think it came from cutting wire. But it does. It takes a whole family whenever commercial fishing, make it work.
Were there certain chores that women and girls were expected to do that boys and men didn't do?
Yeah, like whenever they have the catfish line, the trot line, they have to go out in the next morning after they fished all night and catch bait. So there that line is in a tub, and it's up to the woman to get it back on the jump boxes.
Can you explain what a jump box is?
Well, that's just a rack or just boards that's sawed and fixed so that the line lays right in each individual thing so that whenever they go to bait them, it's all right there in one little stack, or whenever they go to run them out, it doesn't take up a lot of room in the boat. Plus, they don't get tangled so bad.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mrs. Mora, you just told us, of course, that you moved to Cortez from elsewhere. Do you remember what maybe some of the first things that you had to learn about being a fisherman's wife that were different to you coming there?
I think being alone so much of the time was one of the major things. As I said, they fished an awful lot at night or all hours of the day and night, and you couldn't depend on it. And just being alone and the uncertainty of it. And also budgeting is a big, big part of married life, because you never know if they're going to catch any fish, if they're going to make any money, how long it's going to have to last if you do make it. And that, I think, is the biggest, hardest part, really.
A lot of fishermen's wives that I've spoken with, part of her job is to look after the books of the fishermen. Is that something that either of you ever did?
I not only did that, I was, for 2.5 years, I was a bookkeeper and payroll clerk, girl of Friday at St. John's Crab Meat Company right there on the river. And so not only did I take care of our own books, but the company, fish house company's books, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I've had a little bit of experience along that line, and it's either you make it all or you don't. Mm-hmm. There's hardly a good, even keel.
Right.
Well, how do you balance a budget like that that's so uncertain?
I pinch pennies myself. you just learn to do those things.
And usually in an area like that, you have a good old banker that knows what's happening, and when you got it, you pay it, and when you don't have it, you rely on him to help you through.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing that helps also is having the seafood, the different types of seafood. I mean, you're really in dire, dire straits if you go hungry around a seaport, so that helps a lot.
Well, used to, well, like my father, he worked fruit in the wintertime, fishing, summertime. That was what you had, and that was what you did. And then as the town has grown, I mean, there's no getting around that. Why it's worked out, why people can have different year-round jobs. But a commercial fisherman that's in the business has to go after catfish one season, crabs another season, and shad another season, or else they're not going to make it year-round on fishing. And there's a lot of outlay and a lot of expense to it.
Years back, also, in our particular area, the women went out in the summers and gathered scallops and sold those to help supplement the income. But that's a thing of the past now due to all the pollution and the environment and all that type of thing. So we have absolutely no scallops.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if anyone in the audience has any questions to ask Judy or Priscilla.
How do you collect scallops when there are
scallops? Well, you go on a low tide and you just walk around in the bay and you can feel them with your feet. Uh-huh, you can feel them. No, they're lying on top of the grass, usually. And you can see them squirt, or they'll start swimming in the water. But when there were scallops, I mean, you had very low water that you looked for them in, and you could see them. It was clear, and you could just walk around and pick them up. Some people, when they really did it, you know, to sell and really went for them, they had glass bottom boxes that they looked through and could see them, magnified them.
Any other questions? Okay, well, I'll ask one. What's the most important thing? Now, if you knew of a young girl that was fixing to marry a fisherman's wife, what's the most important thing that you would tell them to be prepared for?
Hard times.
I try to talk them out of it.
Really, it's a rough life. You think the fisherman has it rough.
Well, each time I married, they weren't fishermen when I married them. But this is something that you can fall back on. Like I said, we had fruit. That was in the wintertime, and that was the way of life. And so it was only in the summer we had the fishing. But it has expanded to other jobs.
So, we're talking about maybe the negative side of it a little bit. What are the good things about being in a fishing family?
You don't get hungry.
Yeah?
And you're more or less your own boss. You can go or come when you want to. If you can afford to take a vacation, glory be, you know. I mean, you don't have to wait till that vacation time rolls around. I have three sons, and they all three fish. So once you're born and bred in it, just something gets in your system, and they seem to just stay regardless of how rough it gets.
Well, in one time, while we had the monkey fishing there on Lake Crescent, and I had brothers into that, and my ex-husband was also a monkey fisherman, as I was a lot of people.
A what?
Monkey fishing.
What's that?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Anyone know what that is? What's monkey fishing?
It is definitely outlawed now.
Okay, is that a type of fish or a way of fishing?
No, it's a way of fishing.
Tell us about that.
Well, you do better if you wait for the men to do it. But nevertheless, they take it out of an old telephone, anyway, and they make it, hook it to a battery, and they have electrical charge that goes into the water. This affects the catfish. It shocks their whiskers. They come to the top of the water. You stand there and dip them up.
Uh-huh.
Well, why is it called monkey fishing?
Because the rig that they use is called a monkey.
Oh.
Well, how about that now? Okay.
There was a lot of them thrown overboard when the game wardens come. And whenever you monkey fish, you made some money.
Mm-hmm. I've heard people call that production fishing, or stick a dynamite or something in the water. You know, a lot of stories about legal activities like that.
Right.
Now, what about cooking now? Are there certain recipes that are part of life in fishing communities that people pass on in families?
There is up our way. That's the reason the catfish festival got so big so fast.
Yeah.
The freshwater stuff. And the blue crabs out of St. John's River is just beats any saltwater crab you ever tasted.
What are some of the seafood recipes you like in your family?
Oh, I like fresh crab meat with macaroni salad. And makes a main dish, and one you can fix up and put in the refrigerator and eat when you want and really enjoy. Plus, I like southern fried catfish. Little ones, you know, the fingerlings. You go in the restaurant and get for $5 and $6.95, all you can eat.
How about you, Judy, and your family?
Oh, smoked mullet or fried mullet or crab rolls. And I think that's basically...
Yeah. Do you write, either of you write down recipes?
I have for the crab salad.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I just little this and little of that.
Right, right. Some of you may know, having looked around the area here, that over in the far corner, Judy and her husband Albert are smoking mullet over there. So here's an opportunity for you to learn more about this traditional way of food preparation. So take a few minutes later on and have a look at that and ask them about what's going on over there. Mullet smoking is definitely a very strong Florida coastal and inland tradition, a way of preparing fish that's not so common in other parts of the country, but very much practiced and enjoyed here in this state. Any other questions for Judy and Priscilla here before we wrap up this workshop this afternoon? Okay. Yeah, anything else either of you would like to say before we shut down here?
Nothing.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you both, Judy Mora and Priscilla Bennett, for joining us. And let's have a round of applause for them. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much.